Hello!
Welcome back to the Ad-Libbing Podcast.
Have you had a nice week and have you missed us?
If you have, we're back. It's Monday. We're going to be releasing new episodes every Monday. Who's on the show today, Nat?
Today, we've got the extremely talented and gorgeous Olivia Bomley, who is my castmate at Emmerdale.
Olivia talks about all sorts of things to do with her career, how she got into the industry, and also about giving yourself permission, taking ownership of who you want to be in your life, which I think is really interesting.
But in the meantime, sit back and relax and listen to the sound of Olivia on our theme tune. Olivia Bomley.
Hi, hello.
How are you?
I'm good, thank you. I'm good. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you. We're very excited to have you on the podcast, aren't we?
It's really good to see you because we usually spend quite a lot of time together in normal life.
I know. Yeah, I know. It's so odd, isn't it? I mean, it's just a very odd situation, but it's lovely to see your faces over a screen. How are you both doing?
We're very good, thank you. We are very, very well.
A little bit of hay fever, but you know. We can deal with that.
Yeah, I'm glad you can't see my eyes. They're a bit puffy and bloodshot right now.
Actually, I can even see that through the screen, to be honest, Ali.
Put my glasses on.
Bad.
It's quite distracting. Yeah. Guys, can we just take a one pause for the moment? Because my contact lenses has fallen out of my eyes.
Okay, so Olivia, we met obviously at Emmerdale, where I play the character Amy Wyatt and you play Dawn Taylor.
I do, yeah.
So just a big shout out to the cast and directors there for putting us in touch with each other.
For bringing us together.
When did you join?
I started in 2018, so it was quite a different introduction to you, I suppose, Nat, because I started as a character that wasn't a regular, that just came in for a few episodes. And so Dawn's character was just basically brought in to aid the story of Ross. And Ross had a huge storyline at the time, which was with an acid attack. And Dawn's character was brought in to be a part of that storyline, but it was only due to be in for about 8 or 12 episodes. And then it kind of extended the storyline and I came back for a bit more and a bit more, a bit more. And then didn't leave. So
she's still there. She just kept turning up for work. Yeah. And they were like, oh, yeah, are you still in this? And she was like, yeah, I definitely am.
Yeah. So I think it's quite interesting psychologically starting a job like that because you don't expect it to carry on and you don't have a long contract and you don't. Every little bit more that you get is a massive bonus. So every time I'd get through, they'd go, oh, we're writing a little bit more for Dawn. Oh, it was really exciting. And then so when they offered another 3 months or whatever, it's just meant it's been quite a fun journey with the character because you didn't have it set out from the very beginning.
That must be a really good feeling when you go in for a certain amount of episodes and they keep writing you back for more. You must be like, oh, cool, I must be doing something right here.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think as well, the character wasn't a particularly likable character and wasn't one that I expected would be able to fit into the village very easily because she didn't have any ties. She was a heroin addict and a prostitute. And again, like Mike's character, which was Ross, was leaving. So there was no kind of romantic future with them or anything that could work. So it was definitely in my head a very short thing. But actually, what was really nice was the audience reaction when she first came in. People seemed to react quite warmly to her as a character. And then the writers wrote really interesting stuff. And they wrote this backstory that I just thought was so brilliant and totally changed the trajectory of the character and the future plots and stuff. And it was, yeah, obviously then it made this character, rather than just being a bit part of someone else's story, it had a whole rich backstory to play. So for an actor, that was really exciting, actually.
And the British public love an underdog.
Yeah.
They must have loved Dawn.
She is an underdog. I mean, she's definitely an underdog. But, so she's such a fun character to play because she just makes so many mistakes. And I think the thing about soap, I don't know if you'd think this, Nat, as well, is that you just get the opportunity to play quite wildly dramatic storylines on a regular basis. Yeah. But you get to really test yourself as an actor by kind of having to switch between different storylines and emotions and stuff very, very quickly. So it's a real like challenge, actually.
Had you done much TV before the role of Dawn Taylor in Emmerdale?
No, I hadn't. So I think that's why it was really exciting for me to get those first few eps, because I'd done bits of screen and films and short films and stuff like that, but I hadn't done anything TV wise, and I'd was just really grateful to be able to get a run at a character for a few episodes. So I've learned so much on this show, because when you're, I think as well, the speed at which it works, soap, and the speed of kind of filming generally, and having to move, like essentially learn lines super quickly, take direction really quickly, and film in a couple of takes is a bit of a baptism of fire.
Yeah, I can imagine that's a really steep learning curve. I'm always amazed by how much you guys at Emmerdale and the other soaps get done in a day. Yeah. It's incredible. Sometimes, you know, we'll have dinner together, won't we? And you'll both be in the next day and you'll show me the scenes that you're doing the next day. I'm like, whoa, you're doing all of that in a day. And like, well, we're not just doing that. That's just the scenes that we're in.
I know. Yeah. And I just think that, like, I mean, our brains just now after lockdown, I don't know how we're going to go back to it. I'm mush now. I don't know how we're going to be able to do it, because you get into a habit, and it must just change the way you learn things and your memory, because I think we have a very short-term memory of learning lines very quickly and then letting it go. And yeah, but you can be doing like 11 scenes, 12 scenes a day of quite heavy dialogue. I don't tend to have to do that too often, but a lot of the characters, you know, are in every single day, every single scene, going over to the village, coming back to the studio, heavy, heavy dialogue. I don't know how people do it, really.
I remember the first job I had that was soap, really. It was Doctors, and I had a guest role on Doctors, and I was in Birmingham filming that for 3 days. And honestly, Doctors, it's like one take. If they've got it, they're moving on. And if you come in as a guest, it's terrifying. Obviously, there's people there. Everybody knows how it works. And then you kind of arrive on set. I was a policewoman, so on a trot in my uniform. And everybody's like ready to go when you get on set, and you're like, oh, okay. I thought I might have a bit more time, yeah. But no.
God, it's insane.
Off you go.
Yeah, and I think when you've not done TV before, it is so nerve-wracking to come into a soap, because obviously the cast have worked together for years and years and years and have a language that, you know, they can work so easily together. It's all very slick. The building and the studios, everything seems massive, and it's this big machine that just keeps going and you just have to slot in. So it is quite terrifying, but they're very cheery at Emmerdale, aren't they? The Yorkshire folk. So they helped us out.
Cast and crew, incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. It was definitely a warm place to come into, but it is intimidating, because I just think that the speed of work, you have to be able to be, you just have to be like, right, well, that's going out then on TV. that's done, and let it go and on to the next.
It's so different to how we kind of got trained at drama school as well, because drama school training is still very much focused around a theatre. You're being trained for theatre. And I mean, theatre, you get rehearsal period. They're getting shorter and shorter and shorter these days, but you still get them. And that rehearsal period is where I kind of build up my comfort with the character, and I play with decisions, and you know, you do that with other people, whereas you're very much making a lot of decisions by yourself, which you have to choose something and go with it, and you don't really have that process where everybody sits together and goes, oh, I like that bit, maybe not that bit, have you thought about this?
And especially when you're used to being very directed, and you're used to kind of, I mean, it's the indulgence really of being able to sit there and break down a script, like you say, and talk about beats and actions and character motivations, and also to have someone give you feedback on what you're doing, and you don't get, there's no time for that.
Am I right in thinking that that wasn't the first part you auditioned for in Emmerdale?
You are right. Yeah, I auditioned for a lot of different parts for Emmerdale, actually, before getting Dawn. It's quite nice to remember this, actually, because I came really close to some, which were, you know, big parts, and I'd done screen tests for them, and I'd done lots of rounds of auditions. And similarly for Emmerdale, but for other I had a run, I think, one particular year when I was getting really close to some parts that felt like TV parts that felt that they would have really changed things for me and didn't get them. And it can feel so unfair when you've gone through so many rounds and you're right at the last moment for something. So with Emmerdale, there had been a couple that had been like that. And I always felt, well, it wasn't quite right. I wasn't quite right for it for whatever reason. And they made that decision. And when you keep getting asked back, you think, well, there's something that they like. And it's just really nice to make that connection with the casting director. And so it's just worth remembering, I think, that when auditions don't go right and you don't get the job, that it isn't necessarily anything that you could have done differently at all. But if you've done the best of your ability, you've probably made a nice impression on that casting director and made a connection, and you never know what will come out of it. And for me, the character of Dawn came out. I didn't audition for Dawn in the end because I'd already been seen so many different times. So I was just asked to come in and do it. So it came about in a roundabout way after quite a lot of hard graft. It wasn't like an overnight casting, really.
No, absolutely not. But I love that story because It's the same as what we talk about in the podcast about everybody's journey as being different to get into the industry. It's the same with jobs. There's no one way to get a job either. And I love that you made such an impression on that casting director that you just kept going back in. And I mean, you must have felt so relaxed by the time you were doing your last auditions there at Emmerdale, because like you probably were on good first name basis.
Yeah, I think as well, it's nice to know that if certain casting directors, if they see something in you and they don't give you the part, that they will remember, and they do. And that's like good casting directors always do get people back again and again. And I think it can feel really heartbreaking for actors who keep missing out on roles and are getting very close. But if you're getting close to stuff and even getting an audition, that's the other thing that, I mean, you start to realize once you're auditioning regularly is that even getting an audition is so difficult. So to be seen and to be in the room is such a lovely opportunity. And the likelihood of getting the job is not high when you've got a lot of people and there's one role going. But what will come after that meeting is never a waste. And I always just think that's always a nice thing to remember, because God, it can be tough when you keep hitting that wall of no.
Exactly. My agent always says onwards.
Yeah. Has anyone else rambled like this, or is it just me? Hey everyone, it's Olivia Bromley here, and you are listening to the Ad Libbing Podcast. If you like what you hear, please like @AdLibbingPod on Twitter and Instagram, and like and subscribe.
So can we take it back to when you were a young chicka back in the day when you were a teenager? And can we talk a little bit about your journey, your very first journey into the world of the performing arts? How did you find your love for the performing arts?
When did you get the bug?
The bug. Oh, the bug. Well, I mean, I did a lot of school plays and stuff. And I did a lot of music at school. And so I was kind of always involved in that kind of side of school life. But I remember having one particular experience which made me think that, oh, this is not too bad, really, which was, I must have been about 13. And I was meant to be doing a performance with my friend Catherine. It was like on a drama evening in front of like parents and other school kids. And I was playing this tall, lanky policeman, and she was playing my mother. And it was kind of a comedic piece. Can't quite remember what it was called now, but who was it by? But anyway, it was a comedic piece, and I was just totally, totally not up for doing it. I was dreading it. As the days were getting closer, I was like, oh, I'm going to have to be ill. I'm not going to do this.
I used to get that with rugby at school.
Did you? Just awful. I was like, how have I signed myself up for this? It's the worst. Anyway, managed to somehow get on stage. And also, you know, you're 13 and I was playing this, like, anyway, the part, it was not an attractive character. And I just thought, nobody's going to find this funny. It's in front of all my school friends, 13 years old. And everyone was laughing when I was on stage. And the more they laughed, the more I did. And I got this, suddenly I was like, oh, this is really working. And I came off and everybody loved it. And so it just was the first time I kind of thought, oh, you get that good feedback. And then I wanted to do it again.
Oh, that's good.
But I would say actually, like I think there's a little stereotype that people who go into the performing arts are kind of huge extroverts or very thespian and like people you can naturally think would go into acting. And I never really felt like that. I was never kind of very showy. I wouldn't say I was necessarily shy, but I didn't love being on stage in front of people at all. It just more came from kind of a, I don't know, maybe like an interest in the storytelling aspects of it when I was a bit younger.
Yeah.
Less of the performance, like the performance aspects of it mainly I found quite horrific when I was young and then kind of enjoyed it more as I got older. So yeah, it's funny, isn't it?
Yeah, when you're standing backstage and you're about to go on and you've just got that feeling in your stomach and you feel sick and you need to go to the toilet and you're like, why do I do this to myself? Why did I choose this job? It's awful.
Yeah.
And then you come off stage and you've got the exact opposite feeling and you're just like high on life and you're just like, this is the best job in the world. Why doesn't everybody do this?
Do you know what? That's just reminded me, when I was 14, I played the role of Fagin in Oliver in my school play and I loved it, and I was really, really confident at the time, and I really just soaked it all up. I loved the rehearsals. I loved the first show, and the second show, just before I went on stage, I was sick in a bin with fear. And I've never told anybody that until this day. I don't think anybody, I'm sure somebody would have found the bin with the sick in
little
it.
Little Ali's sick in a bin.
Been like, oh, someone's been sick in a bin with nerves. But I never owned up to it, and no one really accused any. There was no finger pointing. But,
Ali.
But that's funny, isn't it? Like, I really loved it. God. But just that feeling of getting back on stage, and quite often we get this, don't we? We've done something once and talk about like the second night. What do they call it?
Second night nerves, is it?
Second night nerves, second night syndrome. You know, when like the first show is brilliant and then the second night can be a bit chaotic and things can go wrong because you're either lulled into a sense of security or you suddenly get a hit of nerves once that adrenaline has died down because you work towards that first show. Yeah,
because there's a bit of an actor's superstition that a bad dress run is a good thing.
Yes, yeah. I mean, the feeling, I have run onto stages sometimes, just stepped off onto the stage, like walking off the plank with zero idea where I am, who I am, and what line is needing to come out of my mouth. Like, I have honestly just had a complete blank, and and you just push through that and walk onto stage in front of all these people. And it's insanity. It is full insanity to do that to yourself. But somehow we keep going back and doing it again. I don't know why.
So what did you do next after you found the love for it at school? How did you manage to make it part of your life?
Well, so at school, I did lots of school plays and was quite involved in that part of like school life, but I didn't think it was a career option necessarily. Just because, you know, I didn't know many actors. I remember talking about it and thinking like, oh God, I'd love to do that. But it just wasn't something that I thought would be a professional thing. And so I went to uni and I studied music in Bristol and had a great time. Potentially could have worked harder, a lot harder, but had a lovely, fun, sociable time. And yeah, I think I don't know what I expected about uni. I thought maybe it would be this really like enlightening educational experience, but a lot of it was just socializing,
having fun, and
having fun. So anyway, so at uni I kind of was having thoughts about like what area I went into, and still acting just didn't seem like a feasible thing really as a as a career. And I think a lot of people feel like that, because unless you're surrounded by people who are doing it professionally, it seems like a bit of a mad choice. When I graduated, I moved back home to Manchester and started working as an intern for a production company called Hartshorn Hook. And they're brilliant and very good friends of mine, but they were a small company at the time, but just doing really exciting work. And they now, I mean, they had a little office above a pub in Salford, and they now have gone on to be mega producers and win lots of awards and an Olivier Award and, you know, produce on the West End. So that's quite a nice little, it's nice to see people working really, really hard and getting rewarded. But I worked for them kind of essentially interned for them for a couple of months and started to see that aspect of the industry. And at the same time, I got put in touch with a guy called Simon Trinder, who is actually really influential in my decision making, because he was based in Bolton. He was an actor. He'd done a lot of work with RSC, and he had set up a kind of group based in Bolton Little Theatre, who basically he had the idea that going to drama school was so expensive, so difficult for so many people, that you could learn a lot without paying those fees. And he was doing Saturday sessions. So I started going along to those and really enjoyed it. I just was very much of the opinion that if I was going to be an actor, I couldn't go and train as one. I couldn't afford to, because I'd already studied. I was in student debt, and it just seemed, for me at the time, it seemed like an impossibility to take another 3 years studying something that gave me no certainty. I just carried on learning with Simon, which was fantastic. And I was working with Hearts on Hook, and they asked me if I wanted to be in their Edinburgh show. So I went to Edinburgh Festival with them and started to get a little bit more of a bug for the performance aspect of it. So yeah, and that was, I think, when I really started to think, maybe I'll just give it a go. I'll just give it a year or so and just see what happens.
It's that sort of magical quality, doesn't it, Edinburgh, when you go and do something for a month and then you leave feeling totally inspired and motivated to pursue it for a while longer, when you're just immersed in that culture and just theatre and comedy and music around you all the time. It, like you said earlier, you didn't really know anybody who was an actor when you were a kid, so you didn't necessarily think it was a career option. You go to Edinburgh and you talk about your the theatre school with Simon that you used to do. Suddenly doors start opening up, right? Because you're making communities and you start to see the world a bit, and that you're a part of
it. Yeah, I should mention prior to this, which is actually quite key, because I kind of jumped a little bit. When I was a teenager, I had also done a couple of courses with the Royal Exchange Theatre. They had a youth group and they were fantastic. And the Royal Exchange, it wasn't that I saw it as an option as a profession, but because I was doing these youth groups in this theatre where you did manage to see professional actors, and they gave us discounts to go and see the shows and stuff. So I was quite immersed in that world. And then off the back of that, I decided to do National Youth Theatre. So I did a National Youth Theatre course, which was, again, really brilliant. And I think those kind of experiences. So the National Youth Theatre course was in London and it was a 2-week course. I don't know. Did you do one, Nat?
Yeah, I did the same one. We were trying to figure out at some point if we had have been there at the same time, but we wouldn't have been.
No.
But yeah, it was the same for me, because we went down to London and stayed there for 2 weeks. And it's like, if anyone's ever done any kind of holiday camp, it's exactly that, especially when you're a young person and you're just completely immersed and you've got all of these new friends who like the same thing as you. And it's quite an experience.
It is. And it was just so fun. The people that I was meeting were just so fun. So I think I had that kind of experience of like knowing that it would be a really fun world to go into. It just practically didn't seem really a very sensible option, particularly once I graduated from uni. had quite a lot of debt. And I think also when you're surrounded by people who are maybe doing quite serious things and getting proper jobs, it just seems mad to say to anybody, oh, I want to be an actor. Like, it seems, I remember being in kind of bars and after I'd graduated, of being a particularly one incident being in a bar and someone saying, so like, what are you, what do you do? And me thinking, oh God, like, imagine saying, I want to be an actor. Like, I just couldn't do it. It seemed so egotistical and narcissistic. And why was I not just going off and getting a proper job? Like, who do I think I am, kind of thing. So, there was a big disconnect for me between actually being able to own the fact and go, oh, this is an actual thing that people can do for a living versus, oh, it's just fun.
Do you know what though? It's even when you have made that decision to become an actor and you're a working actor, obviously most work as a working actor, you spend a lot of time as what we would describe out of work. We're not technically out of work because we'll be doing something else. We'll most certainly be working, otherwise we couldn't survive. But when we call ourselves out of work, at that moment, when you're doing your second or third or fourth job that isn't your acting job, there are a lot of people that find it really hard if somebody asks them what they do to say that they're an actor, because they feel a lot of...
Well, the label is so important to people, isn't it? And if you feel defined by what your profession is. And I think the problem with acting is that you're often defined by the job that you're doing right at that moment. So the next follow-up question that every actor dreads is like, so what have you been in? What can I see you in?
Yeah. Oh, I was just about to say that. It's inevitable, isn't it? You know, when you say, I'm an actor, someone's going to say, oh, what are you doing? What have you been in? Quite a lot of the time, especially when you've just started, that answer is like... not much.
Yeah. I think it's one of the hardest things as well. Even like you say, when you have graduated, to own that decision to go, I am an actor. And even if I'm not making any money from it at the moment or whatever, this is my identity.
Obviously, as we've all experienced, we were all very embarrassed and we were or weren't going to be actors. And you made a decision. And I happen to know that you did go to drama school, didn't you?
Yeah. So in the end, I did go. I went to the Oxford School of Drama and they had a really brilliant Dada Award scheme, which was Dance and Drama Awards. So basically offered kind of incredible bursaries for people. So I was just really... really lucky because I managed to get this bursary for a year course there. And I thought, right, well, this is an opportunity too good to miss. Moved down to Oxford, wore all blacks, no makeup, no phone signal, like a weird, weird time.
It's a nice place to study, isn't it? It's right in the middle of nowhere, right?
Yeah, it's a lovely, lovely place to study. So I've gone from one farm in Oxford to another farm in Emmerdale, basically. But yeah, it's in the middle of the countryside. It has changed at the moment. The director at the time was George Peck, and he's moved on. So I don't know what it's like now. But when I was there, it was very strict in the sense that we weren't allowed to wear makeup, and we had to wear kind of all black. And I just absolutely loved it. I loved the fact that I could just concentrate on this one thing from 9 a.m. till 6 p.m. every day. And I lived, well, the main thing was that I just met brilliant people there. So it felt so kind of luxurious to be able to focus on the craft for a whole year. And also to have been given the bursary was just made it possible. So I was really, really grateful for that year. And again, it's the kind of psychology of something. If you don't expect you're going to go and then you get the opportunity to, I really lapped it up and learned a lot. I mean, it's not for everyone, drama school. And I also really strongly feel like it's not necessary in order to get into the industry, because
it's not the be all and end all, for sure.
It's not the be all and end all. What it did for me was it gave me the opportunity to experiment and let go of a lot of I think it gave me the opportunity to really start to not care what other people thought. And so that gave me confidence into going into the industry. So it allowed me to be in a safe group of brilliant people to experiment with, I don't know whether it was kind of clowning, improvisation, physical theatre, Shakespeare, all this kind of stuff. And you felt like you could kind of test the boundaries and really see what didn't work and what did work. A year course, arguably, you could keep studying for years and years and years and still not be a fully trained actor. But for me, it was just like the perfect amount of time to just really explore whether I wanted to do it, actually. And yeah, it just made a big difference to be with this lovely group of actors who kind of were on the same wavelength as me as well. And going into the industry, having done, you know, it was a big age range, and going into the industry, having done lots of different things in their life, worked in different jobs, and with the same perspective as me, that like we wanted to give it a go, but we also understood that it was hard and it might not happen. So we just were quite lucky to have like be studying together.
Really built that into you at drama school. They did it ours, didn't they? How hard it is. There was a point where we were all like, okay, we get it, but like, but we're already here now, so we've kind of already made it.
Well, yeah, because I used to think as well, the advice I used to always get was, well, people used to always say, if there's anything else you can do other than acting, do that. And I would be like, that's very depressing and negative. Like, of course there's other things people can do, but like, what if they want to do acting first? And I think there is a narrative that it, because it is so hard, people need to just make sure you're not going into it to be a star, because the likelihood is that that's not going to happen. But if you are going into it for the right reasons, which is, you know, you're really passionate about and want to learn about this craft and create things with people. And going to drama school for me was just kind of solidified that passion. But like I said to you before, I don't think it is the be all and end all, because it can't be, because it's so elitist. Such a small number of people get in every year with such a small number of institutions, and the expense is ridiculous. So I think there are loads of ways to get into the industry that don't include drama school. And if you are lucky enough to be able to go, then it's a good thing to look into. But there's so many different kind of youth theatres and night schools and different kind of ways that you can keep learning. And even people who have trained at drama school for years and years and years still need to keep training, really. So,
oh, absolutely. And I spend a lot of my time learning my craft from Laura Norton. She is incredible.
Actually, you are right. I think, I mean, when you're in the industry, I suppose your main source of learning is from watching other people and seeing how it works, which is massive, actually. And you learn on the job.
What was the maddest thing you did at drama school?
Okay.
And you can answer that as well.
I mean, there's a lot, but I remember we had to, well, actually clowning was pretty mad.
I thought I was going to be great at clowning. It turns out I was wrong. I was useless at it. I was so bad. And I'm sat next to probably the number one clown from our college, 2008 to 2011.
Nathalie Ann Jameson, a natural clown.
I'm so good.
Bet you were. I can see that. Well, it's just the thing about, we had to put on our red nose, and then once you had the nose on, I think we had to just walk into a room full of all our peers, and it was the whole school, and just make people laugh. We just had to make people laugh. I mean, what? That is so difficult. But it was it was really liberating, because you just had to use, like, I think I sang Happy Birthday to myself or something. I can't remember. But
that was our first lesson in clowning as well, wasn't it?
It was. And I can still remember the fear. We knew that was coming as well, because the guys in the year above us would be like, oh, you wait till you get to clowning, the first lesson. You just have to go outside the room and then come back in and make everybody laugh. And everybody fails.
Yeah. You're meant to learn that vulnerability is funny. So that the more vulnerable you are as the clown, but as an actor and a student, you're like, I'm not up for this vulnerability right now. Thanks. Similarly, the masks, we had to do, the dance of our mask. I don't know if you guys did that, but we had to put the mask on and then let it overtake you. And people, some people I mean, people were throwing chairs. It was like this unleashed something that we just climbing up the walls, hanging off. Like, oh God, yeah. I think there's definitely things that you take from drama school. There's definitely things that you discard. That's all I'll say.
I remember a lesson where we had to laugh for an hour and a half. It was the whole lesson. And it was quite fun. It was a voice lesson. But the task was just to not stop laughing for an hour and a half. But you just got so in your own head because you were like, has anybody else noticed I'm not laughing? Or that this is a really fake laugh? And then you just hysteria. Go mad for a little bit. Yeah, hysteria is a good word.
I think the whole point of it was that laughing's really close to crying, because I think most people ended up crying because they could not.
Hang on, you had to keep it going for an hour laughing?
Yeah. An hour and a half.
An hour and a half. I mean, that's surely not good for the body or the mind.
maybe we should go back and pull them up on it and be like, excuse me, in hindsight, we don't think that was good for the body or the mind.
The abs.
Crazy days, but I'm so glad I did it.
Yeah, I loved clowning. So I did my final thing in clowning. I'm sure these are recorded somewhere and I'd love to get a copy. It was me and my friend Maddie Hill, who has also been in soap. She went into EastEnders and Casualty, but she's very good at clowning too. Get that girl on a stage. We did a cooking show for our final thing, and it was just the costumes we were wearing. We just looked ridiculous. I'd love to be able to find the video. It would be so funny.
I think you get so used to as well making a fool out of yourself. I think that's the key takeaway that I took from drama school, is that you have to get up and try things and just fail again and again and again. And eventually somehow you just don't care. You've got this amazing freedom, probably because you're very comfortable with the class or whatever, but you've got this amazing freedom to just get up and go, here we go again. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't matter. And it's quite, how I felt. I don't think everyone feels this, obviously, but
I think everybody does, because you haven't heard any of our podcasts yet, but this is a running theme. Fail and fail and fail again is coming up often. So yeah, I don't think you're alone.
No, I think it's really important. And I think that ties into the whole part of the industry, the idea that you can, you know, you can be going up for auditions and so much can go wrong and you can face so much rejection, but actually, like, that's something blah, blah, blah. Sorry, this is just
That's all right. Fail and fail and fail again.
Yeah, fail and fail and fail again.
I was just thinking that it's really useful that we're doing a podcast about people's journeys into the performing arts industry, mm-hmm. and their careers and how youth theatre and their time as a youngster informed the decisions that they've gone on to make. Mm. If anyone doesn't like it, then we can just say, oh, sorry, we're just failing. And that's kind of what we're encouraging everybody to do. So, you know, we are just practicing what we preach, guys. Yeah. So if you don't like it, don't tweet us, because that's the response you're going to get. You've heard it here first. Hello, it's Ali here. I hope you're enjoying the episode so far. I wanted to take a moment to let you know about my other podcast, The Seven Song Setlist. Here's my co-presenter and best friend, Daniel Kemp.
Hello.
Kemp, what's our podcast, Seven Song Setlist, all about?
So Seven Song Setlist is where we take our favourite artists and favourite bands. If they were playing a show and they could only play seven songs, what would be that perfect setlist? And that's what we debate on this podcast.
We'll be compiling seven song setlists together on loads of the bands and artists that would have been headlining this summer's music festivals. So if you're missing gigging and live music as much as we are, then look out for us on social media, Seven Song Setlist, and keep an eye out later this month, wherever you get your podcasts, for the seven song setlist.
That was perfect.
Woohoo!
So, Liv, you graduated from drama school, which was your second time studying. And then what happened next? Did you start auditioning straight away? Did you have a second job? What kind of brought you to where you are now?
Yeah, so I decided I wanted to move to London and rapidly realised that it wasn't easy to be an actress in London, and it wasn't going to work out really very quickly. So I had to get a second job. And I think what was really nice for me was that I had a cohort of people who'd graduated, and I had lots of actor friends in London at the same time going through the same thing. That made a massive difference, because I don't think I would have been able to kind of keep going when you're having to pay really high rent in London and you're working lots of different jobs to try and think make ends meet. It made such a difference to have people who were in the same boat, and we just all kind of felt, you know, there's a period of time where it's fun and you're really pushing forward all together, but also there's a little bit, not glamour, but there's a kind of a bit of an artistic sense of the struggle, and gone to the big city and you're kind of following the dream and all this kind of stuff. But I think that can really grind you down after a while when you're auditioning and things aren't kind of working out, and you are also having to manage finances and bills and stuff. So it's the same. Every creative feels the same. It's that finding a job that can give you the flexibility to be able to act and take work, but also can you know, pay bills and have, yeah. So it's quite hard to find a structure, but I was really lucky. I managed to find work in places with bosses who were really supportive of what I was trying to do. And so I worked for a fintech in Soho, and would like pop out in my lunchtime and go to auditions and like round the corner in Soho. And I would be doing theatre rehearsals in the evenings and working in the day. And I look back and I'm like, God, that was so tiring. But again, I think it's because a lot of people were doing, were in the same boat. It just felt like what I needed to do. And I had a really good work ethic, actually. I was quite determined to make it work, but it's not easy. It's not easy to balance it. And it's not easy to balance, I think, the mental health side of kind of aiming for something where you don't have a huge amount of control on what's going to happen.
And in amongst all of that, you still had time to make music.
Yeah. So I was still writing and composing various bits and collaborating with musicians. So managing to keep trying to juggle everything, I suppose.
Well, I'm really glad you did, because Liv, with her friend Oz, created the theme tune for this podcast, which is so good, isn't it, Nat? We're so chuffed with it.
Aww.
Nat keeps singing it when we go out on walks. She keeps doing the dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum.
It's good to walk around to that.
Thank you very much for doing that. It sounds so, so good.
I'm so pleased you like it.
Is it Oz Wills?
Oz Wills, yeah, Oz Wills Music. Yeah, he was my housemate. So, and actually, I've just moved out of our house. We've lived together in various houses in London for several years now. So, but yes, it's nice having a musical housemate. So,
and Liv, you are in a band called Damson, and Ali has seen you play live, and I have not. Isn't that right?
That's correct. It was great. I loved it, actually. I took my friend Neil, who's 73.
And now Liv's biggest fan.
I think he is Damson's biggest fan. He's always asking about you guys.
Oh, good. We need a fan.
I would say he'd be very happy to have a shout out on a podcast, but I don't think he has any idea what a podcast is, because he doesn't have the internet.
Obviously, gigging is taking a little bit of a break at the moment. So, but yeah, that was fun, wasn't it, when you came to Finsbury?
Yeah. It was a great night, yeah.
And shall we play a little bit so everybody can hear Olivia's beautiful voice? So that was a clip from This Isn't Love by Damson. And you can find Damson online if you want to see more of Olivia's work, can't you?
Yeah, you can. Instagram and Twitter, Damson, which is spelled Damsen.
Well, thanks for joining us today, Liv. It's been really enlightening.
No, thank you so much for having me. I've loved it. Love speaking to you. and seeing your faces finally.
Yeah.
Yeah, hopefully we see each other again soon.
Yeah, in person, hopefully.
Hello, this is the Olivia Bromley Fan Club here. We thought we'd come on and just say thank you to Olivia Bromley for ad-libbing with us and for the amazing theme music, as we always like to do at the end of our episodes. I hope you enjoyed it today. If you did, what should they do, Natalie?
Give us a like and a subscribe.
We've been overwhelmed by the lovely comments that we have received since our first episodes were released. But if you are enjoying our podcast and if you want to help spread the word of the Adlibbing podcast, then please, I urge you, I implore you to leave a review wherever you get your podcasts from. It would mean a great deal to us. But anyway, bye for now. Who's on the show next week, Natalie?
It's Dave Hearn.
Dave Hearn is from the Mischief Theatre Company. So expect hilarity and expect lots of comedy.